This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Dave Mistich. A Wheeling-based artist is on the road to recovery after being diagnosed with coronavirus.
I can't believe that there's something that can get inside of you. It has so many different facets. And it's not the damn flu. It goes way beyond that.
That story and more on this West Virginia Morning. Less than a year after a Boone County Circuit judge launched the state's first family treatment court for parents dealing with addiction, a couple in the program has graduated. That couple overcame all odds, including a pandemic. Emily Allen brings us this story.
Normally, when Boone County Judge Will Thompson holds a graduation ceremony for his juvenile or adult drug court programs, he holds the event inside the courthouse.
I'd like to thank everybody for coming out.
But for the first two graduating members of Thompson's family treatment court, family and friends gathered outside at Waterways Park in Boone County. In hopes to limit the spread of the coronavirus, the water slides and pool are closed. But the picnic area by the walking trails is the perfect place to celebrate while social distancing. Boxed lunches are stacked on a picnic table so attendees don't have to mingle to eat.
A lot of times my favorite part of graduations is the cake that comes with it. Unfortunately, we can't do cake with the pandemic, so you do have an individual cookie.
Family treatment court is like adult drug court or juvenile drug court. But instead of helping participants with recovery as an alternative to jail, it's designed to help parents with addiction and keep them from permanently losing custody of their children. Local judges and members of Child Protective Services work regularly with parents in the program to advance their recovery from substance use disorder until they are ready to get their kids back into a safe home.
It means they love their child and they want to do what they can to get their child back in their home and be a mom and dad. I think it's what the real basic part of it is. They want to be able to provide a home to that child.
Parents like Sabrina Ward and her partner, Matt, who were reunited with their daughter, Adeline, through the program.
Get all, like, all the support and staying in contact with them every day.
Ward entered family treatment court in October. Before she started the program, she was using methamphetamines. The program wasn't easy. There were a lot of requirements, like weekly meetings with the judge, visits from Child Protective Services, treatment for recovery. Ward relapsed in November, but today she's been substance-free for more than 9 months.
We drink screen three times a week, go to court every Monday, parenting classes, anger management, relapse prevention, early recovery.
Things got harder when courts closed in-person hearings in March. Most of the weekly meetings with Judge Thompson and his more than 20 participants went virtual. A lot of parents could only see their kids over video calls at that time. Matt, Sabrina, and Adeline were reunited with supervision in April. Adeline was even with her parents for their graduation. Ward held Adeline most of the time until she had to hand her over to Matt to help deliver some remarks to those who were there to see her graduate.
Sabrina had wrote out a speech. Is she prepared to give it? All right, everybody give her a hand.
Since I have been sober, I've been able to pay off all my fines, buy things I want. Matt bought a car. Buy things for my child when I want, and I started working at my first job ever. I never dreamed to be where I'm at today, and I'm very thankful and blessed to have been accepted in family treatment court. It has changed my life for the better.
Ward says she looks forward to creating an alumni group for other graduating parents. She and Matt will continue to keep in regular contact with the court. There are four other active family treatment courts in West Virginia where other participants are progressing. In Ohio County, another adult was ready by Tuesday for graduation. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Emily Allen.
During Tuesday's graduation, Supreme Court Justice Tim Armstead announced the state will have three new family treatment courts in Braxton, Logan, and McDowell counties. The Supreme Court is figuring out when they'll be open. The new courts are being made possible through funding from the State Office of Drug Control Policy. Last year, we brought you a story about a Wheeling-based artist who salvages metal at flea markets for his artwork. And today, we bring him back, but for different reasons. Robert Villamagna has COVID-19 and is still in recovery. He spoke with our Folkways reporter, Caitlin Tan, about his experience.
Robert, how are you? And walk me through what these past couple weeks have been like.
Well, right now, of course, my wife and I are both dealing with this. We're on two different levels, but we're both getting through it. But for, excuse me, once in a while I might cough. This started for me on the morning of the 25th of July, and where I woke up with some nausea, diarrhea, and overall body soreness. And that was the beginning. You know, over those days, what was happening to my body was slowly changing, because now we were bringing in elevated body temperatures. I lost my sense of taste. My ability to smell was extremely, extremely weak. And there was a lot of confusion. I was, for 4 days, I was going through hallucinations in the evening.
Really?
And yeah, but when you're trying to sleep, this thing is playing hell with you.
Right.
It was horrific.
So were you hospitalized?
We went in twice. The first time, just for a day, and then came home. But a couple of days later, she had to take me back in the ER, and then they admitted me for a couple of nights because we couldn't get my body temperature down, and that was a big deal. That, and we couldn't get my blood oxygen level up high enough to maintain me.
So since you've been back home,
mm-hmm.
Are things getting better? I mean, or are they just staying the same?
No, they're improving, but they're so tiny. I can only look at it looking at the day before.
So like today, what are you going to do today to pass the time?
Well, today, there won't be a whole lot. Yesterday is the first time I went in a studio for about 90 minutes. It was the first time in maybe almost 2 weeks. It was exhausting, but it was helping me with my sanity because it's been hard to concentrate more than 15, 20 minutes on something. And so you kind of lose your train of thought. So today I'm going to try another 1 hour to 90 minute segment if I have the stamina for it.
Now, Robert, you've been pretty vocal on Instagram. And let me just read this one paragraph you wrote. You said, "I know that there are a lot of people who believe this whole pandemic is a hoax, some scheme created to bring down the president. Many others believe mask wearing requirements are somehow stomping on their rights as a free American. I don't know how to debate these issues. I don't even understand the concept. We are in the middle of a worldwide pandemic." I mean, that must kind of hit home now after everything you've gone through.
I've had a hard time understanding how there could be these choices being made by humans that tend to be politically based. It's just that this is science and health and people's lives. And that kind of blew my mind. So when this thing actually hit me, I go, holy crap, you know, this stuff doesn't care who or what you are. But people, I don't understand it.
As someone who has been through one of the more extreme versions of COVID, I mean, and you're still yes. recovering, what would you say to someone who is doubting the reality of COVID?
What's unfortunately, I think, going to convince somebody who has not been convinced is that either they wake up with this or a family member wakes up with this. Because I kid you not, you're in for the fight of your life. And there's a period where you just want to get through it. And you can't believe it. You can't. You. Just a minute. You can't believe that there's something that can get inside of you and has so many different facets. And it's not the damn flu. It goes way beyond that. And it can bring with it so many things. This thing is so for real. It really is.
Robert, thank you so much for sharing.
Oh yeah, no problem. Thanks.
That was Wheeling-based artist Robert Villamagna speaking with Folkways reporter Caitlin Tan about his uphill recovery from the coronavirus. What if I told you that airplane manufacturing is one of West Virginia's biggest industries? In fact, our state exports more than $150 million of airplane parts every year. It's West Virginia's fifth major export. Surprised, so were we. We did a little digging and found out that while West Virginians aren't making brand new airplanes, we're actually doing something kind of innovative. We're repurposing older plane parts that have been decommissioned. So basically, recycling older jet engines. But now, the global pandemic has meant less travel, and airplane companies are facing major economic challenges. But as Inside Appalachia associate producer Eric Douglas found out, West Virginia's role in the aviation economy may actually stand to be more resilient.
Commercial aviation has seen a tremendous downturn because of the pandemic. People just aren't flying. But much of the aviation industry in West Virginia revolves around companies that fly their own airplanes. That sound you hear is the shop floor at Pratt & Whitney's facilities in Bridgeport, West Virginia. Pratt & Whitney is a multinational corporation that manufactures jet engines for civilian and corporate jets like the Gulfstream 500. The West Virginia facility doesn't make jet engines, but repairs them and gets them back in service. And that may be a good thing for West Virginia as the industry goes through post-pandemic recovery. Richard Abalafia studies trends in the aviation industry for the Teal Group. He says West Virginia's work in servicing older aircraft engines may give it an economic edge over the rest of the country.
The major centers primarily do new build, and that's going to be a bit more volatile, you know, than fleet sustainment. So that might provide a level of insulation for the West Virginia facilities. Could mean that keeping older planes in service a bit longer is also good for the folks who do sustainment.
20 businesses in West Virginia provide materials, make airplane parts, or service engines and airframes for the aviation industry. Back inside Pratt & Whitney's facility, General Manager Tim Tucker points to two long rows of workstations with overhead cranes that transport heavy jet engines down the line. There's a dull roar, but apart from the occasional clanging, it's quieter than one might expect.
Engines will come in, bring them in, disassemble them all the way down to the nuts and bolts, go through, we'll clean them, inspect them, repair anything that's deviating, and then bring it back and build it all back up together right here.
Engine management specialist in Bridgeport fills a unique niche in the aviation industry. They receive mostly Pratt & Whitney engines that have been taken out of service for one reason or another and completely disassemble them. They remove the parts that have a usable service life and sell them back to Pratt & Whitney to return other engines to flight. The company's owner, Tim Critchfield, indicates an engine on a stand. He explains the value left in each one.
So they could range anywhere from a part out, a reduced to spares engine, could range anywhere from $50,000 to $200,000, depending on the engine.
According to the latest jobs report from Workforce West Virginia, there are about 3,600 West Virginians who are employed by the aviation industry. And while that's about a third of the people currently working in the coal mining industry, it is a start towards making the state's economy more diversified, says West Virginia Commerce Secretary Ed Gaunch.
It's critical to our future. We've been an energy state. Coal's been important to us, still important, and I think will remain important. But what we're trying to do is construct an economy around some of these other industries.
Gaunch says the aviation industry pays about $24 million in taxes, and each job in the industry has an average salary of $78,000. Despite those earnings, there aren't enough skilled workers to fill the positions, says Ruben Segura, the deputy general manager at Pratt & Whitney's Bridgeport facility.
That's why we're getting the involvement with the high schools and universities and colleges, because we're going to have that resource available to us if we want to continue to grow.
To work in the aviation manufacturing industry in West Virginia, workers typically need to go through an airframe and power plant course at a technical college or university. There are just two of these programs in the state. Next fall, Marshall University will launch a new associate degree program with Mount West Community and Technical College to certify technicians and keep West Virginia's aviation industry flying high. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Douglas in Charleston, West Virginia.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. I'm your host and producer, Dave Mizditch.